It's amazing how many people think they're experts on so many things. You get into talking with people at work, or if you're on Facebook, and people just seem to know everything. Facebook makes them smarter. It's like that the Holiday Inn commercial, Holiday Inn Express commercial. You know, you stayed there, so obviously you know everything. And yet, you listen to them, and so many times you walk away, just shaking your head that you can't believe what people believe. There's also, of course, commercials out there about, I heard it on the internet, it has to be true. But there's a level of confidence in their opinions and thoughts among many, many people in the world that isn't reflected in really what they believe and what comes out of their mouth so many times. And I'm sure all of us fall for that or fall into that group on occasion where, and I think all of us probably can look at our history and think about times where we were just certain that we knew what was right. We knew this was true. We knew this was the way it had to be. This was the way it worked. And then something happened, and we found out that we weren't as smart or as right about it as we believed we were. And it's normal, but there is also can be some dangers in that, because we say things that turn out to be foolish, thinking that they're wise. And the topic we're going to be discussing today, looking at in the Bible, is wisdom. The three wisdoms for a title. Because there are three types of wisdom that the Bible talks about. And I believe as we go through these, all of us will see that we have had those wisdoms in our life from different times. Some of them are wisdoms we really don't want. And it will be a warning to us to be on guard against that type of wisdom. And some wisdom is something that we should look for and strive for. I thought that it would be something good to talk about today because we're dealing with things leading up to the Feast of Tabernacles. So many times there are trials, as I mentioned, and difficulties. And the Feast of Tabernacles puts us in a different environment, in a different situation than we are normally, that we're not normally accustomed to. And again, we can be faced with decisions on what we should do, what we shouldn't do, or how we should respond to things that will go much better if we apply the right kind of wisdom. We use the wisdom and we know how to judge the wisdom that we should use. So again, today we'll be talking about wisdom. And the Bible talks a lot about on this topic. We won't cover nearly all the scriptures that there are today dealing with that, but it is something that we're told is important. Turn to Proverbs chapter 4. And we'll begin reading in verse 1. Proverbs chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. And probably a familiar passage for many of you, most of you. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding. For I give you good doctrine. I'm telling you things of value. Do not forsake my law. When I tell you something is the way that you should do it, it's a good idea if you do it. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me. What I'm telling you, I'm passing on from my father. And he said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commandments and live. Get wisdom. He summarizes some of the things that he was instructed and that he's passing on, and God is passing on to us through the inspiration of recording this. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Don't forget, don't turn away from the words of my mouth. Don't forsake it. Or, you know, he says her here, wisdom and understanding, as they're being treated like a female. Do not forsake her, she will preserve you, love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Wisdom is very important. Therefore, get wisdom, and in all of your getting, get understanding. Wisdom leads to understanding, is what he's also saying, that there's a progression. Wisdom is what you need to get a true understanding, a right understanding of things. Exalt it, and it will promote you. It will bring you honor when you embrace it. It will place on your head an ornament of grace, and a crown of glory will be delivered to you. Wisdom is important. Get wisdom. And it is something that we're told we can get, that we need to get, that it comes from a source outside of ourselves. To get something, you're not grabbing inside of you. It's something that has to be, that comes from an external resource. God says that if you have the right kind of wisdom, if we exercise, live our life based on the right kind of wisdom, it leads to good things. It leads to good results. And so we can also step back and look at it from the flip side of that as well. Are there areas you're struggling in? Are there areas where you're not succeeding? Are there areas where you are really having a hard time? More than likely, there is an aspect of not using the right kind of wisdom in the way that you're dealing with that area, that you're approaching that. That you're missing something and you're acting in an unwise manner in that area. So let's begin talking about the first kind of wisdom. To do that, I'd like you to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And we will begin in verse 17. And Paul's talking, and he says, "For Christ didn't send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel. He didn't send me to baptize, but he sent me to preach the gospel. Not with the wisdom of words, lest the cross of Christ would be made of no effect." The wisdom of words, an interesting phrase that's translated here. And it's talking about a wisdom that's there by appearance. Not necessarily by content, but by appearance. It's talking about when you read the meaning of the words, you read through some the commentaries, it's talking about someone who talks authoritatively, but doesn't have truth to back it up. A big orator. You know, someone who is just a great speaker. And so everything that you hear from him, you think it's just awesome. It's got to be true because look at how he says it. He makes it interesting and lively. And not that as speakers we aren't supposed to try to do that. But there are people who put on a big show of just being a great talker. And what's behind that isn't wise. Paul said that he didn't come as a great orator, but he came to preach the gospel. It's essentially what he's saying there. He didn't come just to try to appear wise to them. He came to with actual words of wisdom. Let's continue reading. "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are in the process of dying, who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it's written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where's the wise? Where's the scribe? Where's the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world?" And you could use a number of different ways to describe this type of wisdom. I think the best way is what Paul just said there, how he described it right there at the end in verse 20. The wisdom of this world. The wisdom of people who are worldly, who aren't led by God's Spirit, that's a danger. And verse 19, he quoted and said, I will destroy this kind of wisdom. God says, I will bring this kind of wisdom to nothing. So it isn't godly wisdom. It's a wisdom that comes from unconverted people, from people living in this world. You know, we have that, we'll read a parable later that really kind of speaks to this kind of wisdom. Someone who's really smart in how the world works. There is a wisdom that's tied into how the world works. But if the world is unrighteous, we shouldn't be jumping in and using that kind of wisdom in the way we live in the world. Paul says in verse 20, he really describes three kinds of people. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? And he's talking about people who that is being types of people who exercise this type of wisdom. And I'll give you some definitions of what those types are. We know people who believe they're wise. Someone who has committed themselves to spending their life in school. You know, they have doctorates and PhDs, and not that that's bad, but if you believe that that's the source of all truth, it can lead you in the wrong way. And someone who, again, I certainly have known people like this. I would imagine most of you have come across people like that who believe because they have that PhD, anything they say about any subject, they're wise. They know about it. They've had this education, and that those initials behind my name prove just how wise I am. So don't really argue with me because you're down at this lower level. You don't have that education that I do. So that's a type of wisdom that, again, we have to be careful about. Because it can't, at the source of it, it can be vanity. And again, education is a good thing. I'll say it can be a good thing. It can be used for righteousness. But we have to be careful that vanity isn't associated with that. That you're still humble about what you have been allowed or had the opportunity to do. The scribe, they say, talks about someone who likes to write, to likes to put their opinions on paper and prove in writing what their wisdom. And the simplest thing, I think, again, is Facebook shows a lot of that. A lot of scribes out there who believe that, you know, they link up enough different web pages and different things, and it will show just how smart they are by liking this or putting this on their Facebook. People who who enjoy writing their opinions down about things and then sharing with other people as a proof of how well, again, they can write and put their thoughts together. And they can make, you know, on the surface, they make sometimes really good arguments until you really dig deep into it and you start to look at where the weaknesses of logic are, things like that. And then the third type of person that Paul linked to this wisdom of the world, as he calls them, the disputer. Again, it's the debater might be a good way to put it as well. Someone who likes to argue about everything and is very good at it, very good at coming up with arguments about things, likes to stand up in front of a group and express their point of view and convince you that they've got all the points lined up behind that point of view. And many times it's difficult to deal with someone like that because they're very fast on their feet. They're very flexible in how they make their arguments. And if your brain doesn't work that way and you aren't trained that way, they can kind of leave you in the dust as far as being able to just come back right away with one thing after another. And those are difficult. And many times when you run into someone like that, that is how they try to win their argument. They'll just, beat you to death with their arguments. And they're not, it isn't a discussion. They're not listening and responding to you. They're just, they've got their points down and they're going to make them well. But the disputer, the debater is talking about someone who likes to give their opinions, likes to speak their wisdom, doesn't really look to check whether their wisdom is valid once they are sure of it. When you discuss these types of people, I think we've run into people in our course of our lives that are that way. The lesson for us to learn is to make sure that we aren't in any of those kinds of people. That we aren't in some ways in our life using the wisdom of the world as a way to interact with people or to make our points about things or just to live. The wisdom of the world in general, as I said, there's a level of vanity or pride that's behind it. And a sense of superiority. And when we allow ourselves to feel, to have that sense of superiority in dealing with someone else, we're heading in the wrong direction. That isn't wisdom to deal with other people and project that idea that you're superior to them. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't talk about the things we know, and we can't use the areas we're expert on, where we have studied and we have learned. When you're talking about the wisdom of the world, it's a lot of it is how it's used, what the purpose of it is used for, to exalt yourself or to help someone else, to serve other people. And the wisdom of the world tends to lead people to trying to exalt themselves. And another of the weaknesses of this type of wisdom is that at the source it's a belief and a confidence in our human ability to study, to learn, and to explain, to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. It doesn't have any, there's no aspect of any relationship with God involved in it. It's, if I study this good enough, I will know everything there is possible to know about it, and then I will be able to be the smart one in the room. And I see this kind of person on most of the media that you are exposed to. All the talking heads, I have such little patience with them, because you listen to them for a little while and they're not learning. They're not responding. They have their party line and they're going to continue to beat it to death. And it's a wisdom of the world. It's a type of wisdom that doesn't lead to righteousness. You can just write down in your notes, if you're taking notes, Proverbs 3:5. But it talks about trusting in our own understanding, that there's a danger in trusting in our own understanding of things. Let's turn to Luke chapter 16. This is the parable I'd mentioned. This is the parable of the unjust servant. Luke 16 will begin in verse 1. Christ said to his disciples, "There was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, 'What's this that I hear about you? Give me an account of your stewardship, for you can't be my steward any longer.' The steward said within himself, 'What am I going to do? My master's taking the stewardship away from me. I don't know how to dig. I'm not accustomed to labor, to actually working. And I'm ashamed to beg. What am I going to do? How am I going to resolve this situation? I'm losing my job. And again, he's still talking within himself. I've resolved what to do, that when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So, all right, I'm going to lose this job. I've got an idea. I've got something that I can do that will get me into somebody else's house. It'll get me some positions, give me something to go to. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, "How much do you owe my master?" He said, 100 measures of oil. So the steward said to him, "Take your bill, set down quickly, and write out for 50. Your debt's clear." Then he said to another, "And how much do you owe?" And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said, "Take your bill and write it out for 80, and then you're good." So the master commended the unjust steward because he dealt shrewdly. So the master could, the master still saw him as unjust, still fired him, still saw this as proof of what he had been doing in the first place, misusing the master's funds. But he said, "Well, in a worldly sort of wisdom, that was a really wise thing to do. To lock it in so that you and ingratiate yourself with other people." So he, it does say he commended him. And I think he just sat back and said, "Well, yeah, that was in a worldly sort of way. That was a smart thing for him to have done." Verse 8 continues, "For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light." Another example of the wisdom of this world. The wisdom that is only focused on making sure you're good. Doesn't matter if you cause harm to someone else, as long as you're good. It keeps you in good graces. It keeps you working. And all of us that work, I think we are faced with similar situations to this at times. Do I do what is exactly right, even if it may cause me a little bit of problem, it may cause me a little bit of pain, or do I exercise some form of worldly wisdom so that I'm okay, I'm good? So it's something to think about, because there's many ways, if you dwell on this and you meditate on this principle, I think in all of our lives, you can see ways where this applies, where you've either used this kind of wisdom in the past, or you face temptations in your job or in other relationships to do this kind of thing. Wisdom of the world. At its very, I guess it's most innocent, it's the idea that, well, it was, it's just a little white lie, it's okay. But it's accepting sin, really. Misusing something that isn't yours, giving away, which is what he did, something that isn't yours. We're told that the way we should live our lives is one where we don't harm other people. Matthew 10:16, "Be wise as serpents, harmless as doves." How often do you think of how many ways that phrase "harmless as doves" can work in our lives? Harmless means harmless. Means that you're living your life, you're making decisions that don't harm someone else. This unjust servant, even though he was shrewd, he was wise in the wisdom of the world, he harmed his master. And the last part of that verse that we read says that we really are at a disadvantage in operating in this world, right? We're at a disadvantage when we operate in this world, for the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. Very rarely in this world is someone who is truly following Christ going to be able to ascend to the real heights of anything within your work, within many other things, because there's always going to be someone who's shrewd in the ways of this world who doesn't mind talking behind your back about you and undercutting you and making anything that you do that is noteworthy look a little bit less because it makes them look better if you don't look good. But we can't be shrewd in the ways of the world with the way we live our life. We can't allow the wisdom of this world to lead our life as a Christian. So let's talk about the second type of wisdom. And this is certainly related to the first. I think it's a more specific type, which is why I've given it its own separate category, I guess. Turn to James chapter 3. Turn to James chapter 3. We will begin reading in verse 14. James 3:14. If you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, don't boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom, that type of wisdom, doesn't descend from above, but it's earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there also. Demonic wisdom. There is a wisdom, I have titled it the wisdom of Satan. Closely related to the wisdom of this world, but where I think the wisdom of the world in some ways doesn't recognize its source. Satan's wisdom comes from Satan. He knows what he's doing. He knows the wisdom that he believes in. It comes from him, and it's his product. And so it's more focused, more viral, more dangerous to us even than the wisdom of the world, because it's focused in many ways on us. Satan has his own type of wisdom that allows him to justify the things that he's trying to do. Satan doesn't believe he's wrong, just like those other people we've talked about. Don't believe they're wrong, even though when you step back and you shake your head at how foolish it appears. Satan doesn't believe he's wrong. In Satan's wisdom, it's good to try to destroy mankind. In his wisdom, it's smart to do everything you can to thwart God's plan. Those are good things. Those are smart things. Those are wise things in the wisdom of Satan. In his wisdom, his plan is going to work. There is no indication of wavering in Satan, in his belief that what he's doing is going to work, that one way or another, he's going to find success. I don't see any evidence of a maybe in the way Satan adjusts or attacks us, or attacks this world, or attacks God's plan. If he didn't have that confidence, he would waver. And it talks about some of the qualities of this type of wisdom in verse 14, which we read. Bitterness, bitter envy, self-seeking. Those are things, of course, as a Christian, in our head, we know we don't want to have those be part of us. But in practice, there are times where probably all of us have felt those and allowed those to influence our actions, at least for a little while. You know, maybe it was a bad day. Maybe it was a bad couple weeks. Maybe it was longer before, you know, God got your attention and helped you to see, oh, look, wow, what have I been doing? What have I been operating under? Why have I been motivated by this? But there are times where bitterness or envy or self-seeking, I'm sure, have been part of, you know, in our motivation. And the thing is, again, Satan doesn't see bitterness or envy or self-seeking as bad things. He doesn't see those as negatives or weaknesses. Those are strengths. Bitterness allows him to keep fighting, even when he's faced with a defeat once in a while. He'll keep going. They motivate him. He believes every being for himself. And he uses all the things that, from a Christian standpoint, we see as negative as motivation. The way that he works, the way that he tries to push other people to work. Have you ever been associated with someone who uses anger and intimidation regularly to get what they want? You know, maybe it's that boss who, maybe he'll ask nice the first time, but if it isn't exactly the way he wants, there's a blow up. There's a volcano that's just set to erupt on a split second notice. And then there's yelling, and then there's screaming, and then there's anger and intimidation. I've certainly worked for at least one, maybe two, that have been that way. That they believe that anger and yelling is a great motivator. Satan does too. Are there negative things, emotions, actions in our life that we're using to accomplish something? In the way that we motivate ourselves, the way that we deal with other people. It doesn't have to be anger. It can be a lot of different negative things. But is there anything that you are using that kind of negative trait, quality, emotion to get something, to accomplish something? If you are, then in that area of your life, you're certainly listening to the wisdom of Satan in the way that you're addressing it and dealing with it. And again, as we go through the feast, there are times where it's easy to fall prey to that. Even, you know, I think in our normal lives, a lot of times we get into a routine. We kind of have a control. We know the things we're going to face. We know the stresses. And so, you know, you kind of develop a way to handle all those and not really mess up too badly most of the time. But it's when you get thrown into a new environment. You know, you're traveling. You're in with different people. You're in a different place, living in a different place, sleeping differently, eating differently, doing all those things differently, that you don't have that comfort of habit to kind of keep you under control. And that's when sometimes we will find this type of wisdom operates. And of course, we don't want that during the feast. In our head, we don't want that during the feast. Verse 15 that we just read also gives a couple other characteristics of that type of wisdom. It says it's earthy and sensual. And earthy is really, he's just creating a contrast from being from above or being from a being above or a being down below. That it's earthy, it's coming from Satan. Its source is here. And sensual was interesting. I was surprised a little bit at what that really was talking about. The literal translation of that word is animal-like. Animal-like. And we know Satan is described as an animal, that he responds and acts like an animal sometimes. So it's saying that Satan's wisdom is patterned after how the animals think and act. Survival of the fittest, kill or be killed. Take care of yourself. And again, all of this is logical to him. And when we if we fall prey to this type of wisdom, it'll seem logical to us at the start too. We do have God's Spirit that does kind of rein us back in and helps us to see, even if we fall prey, eventually we pull back out. Or we should. We have the opportunity to do that. This obviously isn't the path we want to choose. Isn't the way we want to live our life. And it, just like the wisdom of the world is focused on the I, the themselves, certainly the wisdom of Satan is focused on him. That is where his focus is. It's not to serve, it's not to help, it's not to sacrifice, it's to get. Let's turn to Ezekiel 28. This, again, a familiar section of scripture, I think, but it shows the attitude behind this type of wisdom. Ezekiel 28. And we'll begin reading in verse 12. Son of man, take up a lamentation for the king of Tyre and say to him, thus the Lord says, and the king of Tyre is a stand-in, a type for Satan. When you read the description, certainly it isn't talking about a human being. And there isn't a human being living at the time this was written that this would apply to. So it describes Satan, Lucifer, actually. You were the seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God, and every precious stone was your covering, the sardis, the topaz, the diamond, the beryl, the onyx and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes, the way you were created, was prepared for you on the day that you were created. You were the anointed cherub that covered the throne of God. And I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God, and you walked back and forth in the midst of the stones, the fiery stones. You were perfect in the way you, in your ways from the day you were created until iniquity was found in you. By the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence, and you sinned, and I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God. And I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of the fiery stones. I removed you. I wiped any record of you from there. Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor, and I cast you to the ground. I laid you before kings that they could gaze on you. This was how he turned. He was perfect. And he allowed pride, but it also appears that he allowed anger to corrupt him. Those two things are corrupting influences on us. Those two things lead us to operating with the wisdom of Satan. And the Day of Atonement pictures the fruit, the final fruit for Satan. Well, not the final fruit. Some of the fruit for him living with his wisdom. Satan is bound. It's made clear to him that there is someone who can control him yet. Someone who does have a say. Someone who is more powerful than him. Someone who will not let his plan play out the way that he wants it to. Neither the wisdom of the world nor the wisdom of Satan is the answer to the problems that this world faces. It isn't the answer to the questions of life. It isn't the solution. None of those two types of wisdom do any good in the long run. Let's turn now to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. And we'll begin in verse 22. 1 Corinthians 1:22. The Jews request a sign, the Greeks seek after wisdom. We preach Christ crucified to the Jews, a stumbling block, and to the Greeks, a foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God, and the wisdom of God. So he's saying what they have been preaching gives the Jews problems, seems stupid to the Greeks, but to those who are called, preaching the gospel, preaching the results of Christ being crucified, is a reflection of the wisdom of God. And that's the third type of wisdom that the Bible talks about, the wisdom of God. We'll continue reading, because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. You see your calling, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many wise according to the world, not many that have ever operated in those levels of wisdom, not many of those are called. Not many mighty, not many noble. Not many that know how to succeed in the world are called. You know, Christ said it's harder for a rich man to walk through the eye of the needle, very small opening, than it is for them to enter in the kingdom. It's harder for them to do that because they've learned a way of life that leads to worldly success but is against leading to true godly success. Verse 27, but God has chosen the foolish things, the things that seem foolish to the world, to put to shame those that are wise according to the world. God has chosen the things that are weak, that the world believes are weak, to put to shame the things that the world believes are mighty. And the base things, and the things that are despised, God has chosen. And the things which aren't anything, to bring to nothing the things that the world believes are of value. God's wisdom has superiority. God's wisdom trumps these other kinds of wisdom that we've been talking about. Our goal, our task, is to live our life exercising wisdom that is godly, that comes from God. While we live in a world where all around us, everyone else is operating under a different, whole different scheme. Living their life based on the wisdom of the world, living their life based on the wisdom of Satan. And we are called now to learn how, in the midst of all of that, to live and operate as in a completely different environment, different world, to create a different world that we live in, to have a different set of values. We already read part of James chapter 3 that talked about the wisdom of Satan, but before and after that, it's got some very interesting, good things for us that it says about the wisdom of God. And so I'd like to turn back there to James chapter 3 and read some of those verses as well. The first verse is verse 13 of James chapter 3. Who is wise and understanding among you? Let them show by good conduct that their works are done in meekness, in the meekness of wisdom. That their works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Interesting way to describe things, the meekness, a wisdom that springs from meekness, from not believing you're the best and the smartest in the room, and not believing that everyone should bow to your superiority, but dealing from a place of weakness, meekness. I shouldn't say weakness, meekness. You know, it is a fruit of the Spirit, one of the fruits of the Spirit. And it describes someone who is teachable, considerate, gentle, submitted to God's will. Again, completely different qualities than someone who's successful in the world lives their life under, where you're not exalting yourself. Someone who is teachable rather than opinionated. Someone who's considerate rather than thoughtless. Someone who's gentle rather than harsh. Can we be those things? Always, in all the ways that we deal with each other, the way that we live our life. Showing these fruits, showing these characteristics, give us a good indication that we are living, at least in this, the areas of our life where we're displaying them, we're living that part of our life based on God's wisdom, the wisdom of God, rather than the wisdom of some of these other, the other wisdoms that we've talked about. It comes down to the fruits, how you're living. The reason, the choices that you're making, what's the reason behind them? What's the motivation behind them? Proving superiority doesn't put you in line with the wisdom of God. Showing humility, showing meekness does. Showing vulnerability does. Let's read verse 17 now, still in James chapter 3. But the wisdom that is from above, we could have called this third type that, they could have given it that name too, the wisdom that's from above, is first of all pure, then peaceable, then gentle, then willing to yield, then full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Those are the qualities of the wisdom that's from above. I'm sure we could make a sermon just out of those seven, by the way, qualities that are listed there. The wisdom that is from above is first of all pure. The literal interpretation means chaste or sanctified, not influenced by these other sources. Pure. Peaceable. Again, another fruit of the Spirit. Not led by anger, not led by trying to intimidate someone, but peaceable. If it's at all possible, live peaceable with all men and especially the brethren. Live peaceable. Gentle. When I think of gentle, I think of someone who's patient. Because to be gentle consistently, you have to be willing to see, let other people have their faults and not let that affect how you deal with them. To be gentle consistently, there's patience there. There's a willingness to understand, yeah, you're not in a good place right now. You're not saying something the way that you should probably have said it to me or done what you should have done. But I'm not going to get up in your face about it. I'm not going to confront you and try to beat you into submission. I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to be gentle. I'm going to be patient. And I'm going to try to help you through this rather than beat you through this. Willing to yield. How hard is that from a carnal point of view? Willing to yield. Again, literally, it means easily persuaded, someone who's willing to listen. Not someone who talks from a position of superiority where there's nothing that you can learn from anyone else because you know it all. but willing to acknowledge, well, that's an interesting point. Maybe I hadn't thought about that, hadn't talked about that. Let's talk about that for now. Teach me what you know about that. Help me to understand. Full of mercy and good fruits. Again, a reflection. Mercy is a reflection of God, the way that he lives. And I think that gentleness and mercy, I see those as so really tied together. Are we merciful toward other people? Do we really judge the way that we want to be judged when our faults are on display? Or are we a little bit more strict with other people than we are with ourselves? Are we merciful? Without partiality? Meaning that it doesn't matter, certainly within the body of Christ, who it is, you treat them the same way. There's not someone that's better than someone else. Or at least you don't relate to people based on how they look, what they do, what their job is, whether they have some mental issues, because we probably all have some mental issues somewhere in there that aren't the greatest if we put them on display. But some people have a harder time keeping their mental issues under wraps, and so we see them. Without partiality, without hypocrisy, again, related, condemning someone else without looking at ourselves first. You know, all of us put on our best behavior when we come here to church, and I think it's a good thing. I don't want to say that's hypocrisy just by itself. But it's hypocrisy if when the situation is right, you don't let every other people know that you struggle with things too, and that you're at your best here and you have bad times and you're weak in areas. If all of us came here and showed our worst sides, it would not be a place of peace, and it wouldn't be a piece of comfort, and it wouldn't be a place of rest. But we have those sides. And I think being without hypocrisy means that we acknowledge that. We talk to each other. When the time is right, we share those weaknesses with each other. All of those are part of the description of the wisdom of God, the wisdom that's from above. And I think if you really dig into it and you think about the scriptures we've looked at and the points we've covered today, you see that there's a lot to think about, a lot for us to meditate on. Being in the world and not of the world is a hard thing. We want the wisdom from above to be what guides our life and guards our life. So we need to make that a focus. If that's what we want, then it has to be a focus. We have to think about the qualities. We have to think about where we aren't displaying that type of wisdom and change it and go to God. James 1:5. You don't have to turn there. If you lack wisdom, what does it say? Ask God, and he'll give it liberally. If you lack, ask God. The wisdom from above comes from above. That means it comes from God. It isn't going to come from us out of our own understanding. It's going to come from God. Ask God for his wisdom. The world lives by the wisdom of the world and certainly operates through the wisdom of Satan. And it sets standards for what it believes is success. Standards we're all familiar with, we're all aware of. But that isn't true success. And we know that again as well. We know that as Christians. True success comes from, it's illuminated by the wisdom of God. Directed by the wisdom of God. So let's do this. We've got a few days to prepare for the Feast of Tabernacles. I think this is a good thing to prepare, to use as part of that preparation before the feast. And certainly when we come back, it'll still be needed. So let's get on our knees and let's ask God for the wisdom that's from above. That's the wisdom that will lead you to righteousness. That's the wisdom that will lead you to success. That's the wisdom that will lead you to eternity.